counting down, about to put the anchor down. Well, you know what that music means. It's time for the Paul Finebaum Show. Well, that's that coming up at 2 o'clock. You can hear that on 94.9. But he now joins us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, and that'll be happening every Thursday at this time, and we're excited about that. Paul, how you doing?
Guy, thank you, man. I heard that music, and I thought, man, I'm late for work. But thanks for having me on. It's a great pleasure to be with you guys, always.
Well, we appreciate it, and we're excited here because things are moving in the right direction. In Nashville, Metro Nashville High School football is going to be able to start playing again next Friday. The Titans, starting in October, will start being able to house fans at a certain capacity. Bars and restaurants are starting to open up more. So good things moving in the right direction here as we move into the fall. And that's the case with the big news yesterday with the Big Ten. What did you make of how that whole thing was handled? And, yeah, in the end, they're going to try to get this thing going and try to squeeze in there with the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 and be a part of the playoff system. But what about the whole, how it all played out? What did you think?
Well, I think the Big Ten kept trying to defend itself and realized that nobody bought it, nobody was listening. And besides, football was going on everywhere else. And you mentioned high school in Tennessee, but it was also going on in Pennsylvania and Ohio and in Michigan, and I think what really put it over the wall on Saturday was the fact that Notre Dame in Indiana, Big Ten country, you know, had a football game against Duke. Iowa State played, and I think they suddenly decided to go, you know what, man, the hell, that the science is much better today than it was on August 11th. Is anyone supposed to believe that? No. But it really doesn't matter. They made the wrong decision on August 11th. It was premature. And I think they made the right decision yesterday. We all know nothing is going to be normal this year, and we all know that things can pause and change. Why not give it a shot?
I had a buddy of mine who is in with a lot of – it's part of his job. He has to cover the Big Ten, and he has been telling me for months – well, since really, I guess, the last 6 weeks, let's say, Paul, I know what college football has been playing for the last 3 weeks. About the last 5-6 weeks, and I've been talking about it on the show, like he talks to these Big Ten coaches. He has relationships with them, whether it's the head coach or people on their staff. And he's been telling me they are all saying we're going to play in the fall. Like, it's going to happen. And I was like, why are they saying that? They have been planning to play in the fall. I wonder why the coaches felt so good for them to keep kind of going behind the scenes, that they felt like this day was coming and they were going to get the opportunity to play in the fall. What is your best guess on why Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh and these other coaches, James Franklin, were all still planning like they were going to, you know, play this fall?
I think a couple of things. They looked around the country and saw everyone else playing, and you know, I think they did it twofold. They were trying to keep their own players on board without seeing a few of them opt out, which they did. And I think a recruiting issue was also at hand. I interviewed Jeff Brohm yesterday from Purdue, and he admitted very candidly that had we not played this fall, meaning the Big Ten, they were going to get battered in recruiting. Remember, this is not the normal February, first Wednesday in February recruiting calendar. Recruiting now starts in December, so you better be busy now. And they were sensing that. Maybe, you know, Ohio State probably wasn't going to be as affected. But so that was that incentive. And I think they also felt like maybe the Big Ten had never given a really good explanation. And if you're going to make a monumental decision of this sort, explain it. The Pac-12, interestingly, did explain it, and most everyone bought it. They presented science in a different way than the Big Ten. The Big Ten just expected everyone to believe that they were all on the same page. And, you know, Nebraska started it, but Nebraska isn't influential enough to really affect the Big Ten hierarchy. Ohio State is. And I think, you know, the combination of Harbaugh, James Franklin was very influential. But Ryan Day was the one that I think put it over the top. He kept pushing. And remember, it was about a week or so ago when he issued that blistering post on Twitter that really went right after the Big Ten commissioner. And he has been a failure in all of this. Kevin Warren in the job a year, taking over for Jim Delaney, a legendary commissioner, who, by the way, is living in Nashville, probably listening right now. And he tried so hard to be the smartest guy in the room when he was with his other colleagues, and he ended up making the worst decision I have seen in college athletics in a long time.
We're speaking with Paul Feinbaum. He's brought to you every Thursday at this time by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. All right, with that being said, the Pac-12 is on the clock. Larry Scott is on the clock. What do you anticipate the Pac-12 doing next?
They are on a different they're living in a different universe than the rest of us. And I say that because they have far stricter guidelines. And, you know, I'll try not to even include the tragedy of the wildfires, which is complicating things. But, you know, the ordinances out there are different. And I know what the governor of Oregon and California said yesterday, but it's not easy. And they are way behind. The Big Ten is barely going to be able to pull this off starting October 24th. The Pac-12 is still talking about it. So every hour that goes by means how are they going to be able to get ready by then? And the reason why late October is critical, if you're not playing by late October, you're not getting in the college football playoff. And I'm sure some guy at the end of a bar downtown is saying, well, they're not going to the playoff anyway. Well, you're right. They are not probably going to the playoff anyway. So there's less of a concern, but if they don't come back, even getting six or seven games in starting in November, the Pac-12 becomes even more irrelevant. And I know that sounds like it's redundant, but I'm just trying to characterize their situation.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, his first of a weekly visit with us every Thursday at this time, and he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. So, Paul, let's look a little closer at the SEC. We know around the league every school is dealing with the hurdles that come with this and doing the best they can. But what did you make of Ed Orgeron's a little oversharing in a lot of people's minds, saying, hey, basically most of our guys have had it by now?
You know, I've heard other coaches say that. They just didn't say it publicly and on network television. Because how coaches view this and how maybe – The average person views it are two different things. Coaches have seen countless players get it, and I know they're probably not rooting for it, although from a competitive standpoint, they probably are. And Orgeron just told the truth. I bet if you got a true reading from the SEC schools, the numbers would be, well, they wouldn't be staggering anymore. I mean, Orgeron already said it, but I've heard numbers all summer at various places that are equal or more than what he said. And that's why the season may go off fairly well, because they're, unfortunately, I say this unfortunately because I wouldn't wish this on anyone, whether you come out of it well or not. There may not be many players left to get it.
Yeah, I guess, Paul, that's the double-edged sword, because in the vast majority of cases, you know, I guess guys get it, they get through it, and they move on. And hopefully, as Ed Orgeron said, you've got at least 3 months, maybe more, you're less likely to get it again. Everything's fine with that as long as there's no lasting effects. Or, you know, I've heard, you know, individual cases where somebody gets it, they are sick, and it just takes them a while to really feel 100%. That's what, I guess, in the weeds of all this, we don't really know about what each individual is feeling when they go through that process of, I guess, for lack of a better term, let's use herd immunity.
Yeah, that is the danger. And I'm married to a physician who has her degree from Vanderbilt. So, I hear the other side of it all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's why you just shouldn't go out and get it so you can get past it, because you don't know how it's going to affect you. Yeah, and everyone so far has been good, but all it takes is one. It takes that one player with the underlying condition that no one maybe knew about or saw, and that can happen a lot, that kills the whole thing for everybody, and maybe unfortunately himself. So I don't think it's a great thing to get it just and then get past it, because I have talked to some players who have had it, and they admit it may cost them a little bit in speed, and it may not even affect them now. But let's say you have a a top five wide receiver who gets it next year at the combine, that millimeter of a second could be all the difference in the world between a first round and not being drafted. So I think it's cavalier of coaches to talk like that, but it's also the reality. Coaches are looking at their roster and trying to figure out how do we get ready for the next game and whatever else happens. Where the duplicity and the just the far the absolute farce of the sport comes in is on the other side when you get administrators talk about, you know, we're doing everything we can to protect the players and we're putting in, you know, 18 safeguards and protocol, and then you hear Ogeron say, well, pretty much everybody's already got it.
That was pretty interesting. So, Paul, I heard the discussion on Get Up this morning that you were a part of. What's interesting is in the chaos that we get on some level most years with determining who should be in the playoff, can you imagine if, you know, as we've seen so far, there's some games that have to get postponed, may or may not get made up. So let's say Ohio State is sitting there at, let's just throw 7-0 out there and being evaluated up against a team from a different league, maybe the SEC championship game loser that's, you know, 8-1 or 9-1. That is even more complicated than normal.
Yeah, it's a real problem if you the total number doesn't matter because it really it shouldn't anyway. But, you know, this year, you know somebody can say, well, they're only 6-0. But if Ohio State, you know, goes to Penn State and wins and beats Michigan and whoever else is on their schedule, we're not sure about on the other side, you measure that against, let's say, Georgia with two losses, and maybe they're both against Alabama, who's number two in the country or number one in the country. That's when it gets complicated. But, yeah, it's a subjective panel that we deal with. I mean, I've always felt the College Football Playoff Committee was the easiest job in America, that you could go down on Broadway and, you know, grab 10 guys in a bar, seven beers in, and they could do just as good a job. Because it's really, I mean, I think in the history of the playoffs since 2014, there's been one or two close calls. Ohio State got in the first year, maybe they shouldn't have, and, you know, they rewarded the committee by winning it all. And then there was a little bit of a debate between Alabama and Ohio State another year. But for the most part, it's self-explanatory. This year is going to be that outlier. And, yeah, I mean, am I happy about it? Sure. You guys happy about it? Sure. I mean, we have talk shows where, that becomes a very big topic of conversation. If you're talking about the NFL, there's not much debate. I mean, you get in by winning or losing games. In college football, it's a beauty contest.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network and ESPN. He's going to join us every Thursday at 10:15, brought to you by mtgrt.com. So, Paul, let's actually talk about some of these teams and what they're going to look like once they start play next weekend. What's your confidence level in Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin in year one with him?
It's not particularly high, and that's not based on Lane, who I think is a really good coach. It's just, you know, the last time we saw that team, they were pretty average to mediocre, and you know, they have two quarterbacks, and you know, they have you can say this about everyone in the SEC. They're going to have a hard schedule. Some schedules are more difficult than others, but yeah, I think they'll have a very sloppy year. And he did not have a great first year in recruiting because of when he got in, but I think ultimately Lane Kiffin will improve that product very much.
So you feel like that hire is going to work, and I'm not necessarily, when I say work, I don't necessarily mean he's competing against Saban and Alabama every year for the SEC West title. We know how loaded the SEC West is, but you think that he's the right guy to turn that program around?
Yeah, I think he's a step up from where they were. Now, remember, they had an interim coach for a couple of years in Matt Luke. They just gave him the title, but it felt interim, and you know, that program has not been anywhere near where it was under Hugh Freeze, but there was also quite a cloud that followed Hugh Freeze around. I still think the neighborhood that Ole Miss lives in, what I mean by that is the West, is just so difficult. And he needs he may have that player and a quarterback, but he needs a couple of recruiting classes before I think he can be competitive. He does have a very good staff. His defensive coordinator came from Maryland, where he lost his job there. And so I think that that helps. I mean, Ole Miss's problem really the last couple of years has been defense.
Now, that first week, next weekend, they'll take on Florida and Dan Mullen. And Florida is a team that everybody expects they're going to compete against Georgia for the SEC East. How do you view Florida? Do you think that this is a year where they take another step forward?
I'm still leaning a little toward Georgia, but I am perplexed by the Georgia quarterback situation, having lost Jamie Newman and not being 100% clear on JT Daniels, the transfer from SC's medical condition. But I think it's kind of, you know, and this is a cliche, but it will come down to the Florida-Georgia winner, as it always does. But I still think Georgia has recruited so well in recent years. Florida is a little bit behind them from a roster standpoint. Now, that is unless you talk to a Florida fan.
When somebody asks you the question of, okay, the dark horse in the SEC, how would you answer that?
I think Texas A&M has a chance to be very good. Their schedule got a little bit more difficult because, once again, they have Florida on the schedule. I don't think Tennessee would be a shocking dark horse, but I really feel good about the Vols. I talked to Jeremy Pruitt yesterday. Not that he ever really gives you the feeling that things are okay, but that's just his nature as a hard-nosed football coach. But I like the state of that program overall, in spite of the COVID issues that they've been dealing with. So I mean, I think I would probably go with one, Tennessee from the East and A&M from the West. But the thing about this schedule, though, with 10 games, you have to avoid a bad start because you get off 0-1, 0-2, and I think the challenge of coaches this year will be to keep their players focused. I know that they'll all say the cliche, we're hungry, but this has been a long build-up, and if you're suddenly spinning out of control early, and I'm talking to you, Vanderbilt, you could be in for a rough finish.
Yeah, you mentioned Jeremy Pruitt, who you talked to yesterday, and you've been able to talk to him quite a bit over the years since he's been at Tennessee. What is the biggest change you've seen from him from, let's say, last year when we were having conversations on our show, Paul, of is he going to make it through the season at the start of last year? But what changes have you seen between now and then?
I think while we were having those conversations, and I think they were certainly legitimate because he looked absolutely clueless early on, the administration there decided to dig in. I remember being in Knoxville last year for the Georgia game, and they had lost the first two games of the year and looked just terrible. Then they lost to Florida, and it felt like it was coming apart. And I was talking to some people, to people close to the administration, and they said, we are behind him. We have to be. We've made this mistake before. I think that's where Philip Fulmer comes in, someone who understands the landscape and there are key people in that town who said we have to stand by him. They did. And you can look at the schedule last year and there were a lot of pretty sloppy wins, and even the bowl win which propelled them into the offseason with momentum. I mean, it wasn't all that impressive when you consider the opponent. But I think Pruitt won the fan base back over again. He had the power brokers, but he didn't have the fans. And now I think he has everyone, but he just has to follow through. I think the first game against South Carolina, a place that I think they've won one time in 10 years, which was the last time, is a tricky game. If you lose, let's just say you lose that opener, which is certainly possible, you still have to deal with Auburn and Alabama and Georgia and Florida, and suddenly, compress the season. You there's not a lot of time to make that up. If you have one loss after the first weekend and you've got those other games ahead, you're going to have to upset somebody to really have anything close to a decent season.
No doubt about it. It'll be fun starting next weekend. Paul, really appreciate the visit. We're looking forward to Thursdays with you at this time. Thanks for doing this. Have a great show today.
Guys, thank you. Always enjoy it. See you next week.
All right, that is Paul Feinbaum. His show starting at 2 o'clock today on 94.9. And every week on our show, he's going to be brought to you by mtgrt.com, your live and local mortgage expert. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. We'll talk about some things you just heard there on the college football landscape. We'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.